Is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Gerald Tommy in the bunker on June the 2nd, 2014. Moon's Day today, all day and all night. Moon's Day. Well, we got nice warm weather back here. Overcast. Had some winds this morning. It's a moist, warm air. I think we're going to get some rain. And doing some mowing out on the back 40, I see we need some rain. It's drying up pretty fast, even after all that rain we had just a couple of weeks ago. Well, as the man says, we're right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern here and Steakhouse. Yeah. And that's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. And boy, I'll tell you, they're bringing them in here. We're getting shipments in all the time now. Now that they're going to start bringing the troops and everything back from Afghanistan, boy, we're getting some sweet deals. So you don't have to worry too much about local law enforcement getting a tank or two to protect their little dumpy town. But man, I'll tell you, come on over here to old Happy Jack and I'll fix you up with something so big and so mighty there ain't nothing they're going to do about it, okay? Well, anyhow, that's it. We've been open now for about 2 or 3 weeks, and boy, we've had crowds out here. Families bringing their little kids out here, and we got balloons, free balloons for the kiddies, and wild animal rides, and the whole bit. Yeah, it's been going real good. Over the weekend, I had one of our lone wolves out there send me a little clip from a show. I'm not going to name the show or who runs the show or not, but I usually don't go looking into other shows because I'm so busy doing my own show. But there's a couple of young guys that were giddy as hell. Sounded like they were on crack or something. Giggling at each other's jokes and everything. But went into a big tirade about Terrible Tommy. They actually said that Morris Dees was financing my operations. So I called down there at Southern Poverty Law Center and said, where in the hell's my goddamn money, Morris? They keep saying that you're paying me off, and I'm on your payroll, and I ain't got no money from you. What the hell is this all about? And he said, well, Tom, he says, you know how it is with these right-wingers. They can't get anything straight. They're just so fucked up. I said, Morris, will you tell everybody that you ain't paying my way? Or if you are, get me the goddamn checks because I want to buy me a new car and take a trip to Honolulu. Seems like about every 10 years there's a spate of this kind of stuff, bringing up all kinds of phony stories and lies and stuff. It's cap and trade of the right wing. And then it dies down again, and then a few more years, here it comes again. I don't know, maybe it had something to do with me doing that documentary with the Negress from Germany. I'm digging up the video and the audio on the actual interview. I think I've got it all here. So we'll be sending that out so you know what was really said. And she, like I said, I don't want to be included in with any documentary with all these crazy-ass right-wingers. I want this to be me. Oh, yeah, it's just going to be you. Well, they lie through their teeth. And I'm not going to do any more documentaries unless I do them myself. With my own stuff. They still got me all over the internet as White Aryan Resistance, and White Aryan Resistance was put to bed at least 10 years ago. They were the insurgent. But not one press report, not one writer, not one television person, none of them will ever refer to me as the leader of the insurgent. Isn't that interesting? They absolutely will not use the word insurgent. Now, I guess it's just because they're told in their little book of titles that I was White Aryan Resistance, and that's all they'll ever say. Just like I was the head of the Klan way back in the 75 to 80, and I'm still a Klan leader. I don't think most of the Klans would like what I have to say. Or better yet, I don't think most clans would understand what I'm saying. Anyhow, I put it out there that anybody that's got that real dirty dirt on Tom Metzger, show me some proof, boys. I got $1,000 in cash sitting right here on my little old console that if you can show in any way any evidence that I've ever been paid off by Morris Dees, it's going to be a quick $1,000 for you. So I've offered that many times, and nobody's ever tried to take it. You'd think if people get on the airwaves or on the internet and swear up and down that Tom Metzger's working for not only the Southern Poverty Law Center, but the feds, that somebody would have some proof. Anyway, enough of that falderall. Let's get on to something more important, like... Well, I just put up my latest sign on my big board out in front of my house, my 8x4 neon-lit sign that about, I'd say, 500 cars a day easy see that coming down this road. We get a lot of traffic. It says, the Republic rats ship the jobs out of the country. The Republic rats love war. And the Republic rats want them to lower taxes, corporate taxes. You can't have it both ways, guy. Those stupid idiots, all they talk about the Republicans is taxes are too high. But at the same time, they're voting for a military-industrial complex budget of $700 billion. And that's just the beginning. How can anybody say that with a straight face, understanding that they're voting for over half of the GNP of the United States going directly into an unmonitored the accounting office does not keep track in any way that's important of this 600, 700 billion, whatever it is. But there the Republicans are crying, they don't want any program that'll raise the taxes, any program that'll help the little people. And they try to infer you that's just the blacks. Well, there's millions of white poor people in this country, millions of white working people who've fallen through the cracks. So that inference and trying to play on that stuff is nothing but capitalist racism. Capitalist racism is vicious because it's not really racism. It's a plan to use racial feelings to the benefit of the big corporations, and they've done that for a long time. And they did it in the plantation system, too. Trying to convince the poor people, white people of the South, that somehow the plantation system was good for them. And it was the worst thing that ever happened for the common working class whites that lived in the South. If you don't think so, just check history. Check the living standards of the white working class South during the antebellum and the plantation system time. You know? Yeah, I watched a good series over the weekend, about 18 shows. Well, it was not just over the weekend. I didn't watch 18 shows in a row. Now, you're going to have to see a lot of Negroes to watch this thing, but it's an excellent cops and robbers show, and it's called Detroit 187. If you want to see the landscape of Detroit and everything that's going wrong in Detroit, get that on Hulu. It's on Hulu. Yeah. Detroit 187. I thought it was very well done. But don't come back to me and scream, "Terrible Tom, there's a bunch of niggas on there." Well, it's about Detroit. What do you think's going to be on there? Same way with an excellent series called The Wire, which is also wall-to-wall Negroes. But it's entertaining just by the way they act and how stupid they are and getting caught all the time. So anyhow, The Wire and Detroit 187 are two recommendations. My lady and I usually try to get out of here on Sunday afternoon just for a little break and go to a movie because we get a senior discount, so it's not that much. But anyhow, the quality of the films now is just getting terrible. They either got all kinds of kids shows, cartoon shit, or cartoon shows for adults, and all these special effects shows where there's almost no acting going on. It's all special effects, all off into the Futurama and all that kind of stuff to where. And then they have these jerk-off family movies. They're not family movies at all, like Neighbors and stuff, where it's just a bunch of jerky-ass whites showing how stupid they can be. And just imagine, these films are going all over the world, and that's the way these people in other countries see us. No wonder they don't respect us. No wonder they hate us. If we all acted like these people in these films, it's a wonder we'd have any respect any place. To be perfectly honest, I don't think we do have any respect any place. Well, Ralph Nader, who you've known and who's a champion for safe cars for most of his life, has written a book. And, shit, I didn't write down the name of the book. But anyhow, he's been making the circuit. And he's pushing real hard that there's people out here who are not Republican Party people, not Democrat Party people. I mean, they may be little R's and little D's, but they're pissed off, and they want to go against the government and the corporations. And he's proposing that they get together on some of this stuff, which I have said for decades. You got to get honest people on the left and honest people on the right together. Forget this right-left thing if you're ever going to get any place. And I put out a lot of stuff like that. And hopefully I had some influence on old Ralph. I didn't, probably not. But I have advocated a more left approach. Not the kept left, Jewish-controlled left. In the same way on the right. It's been the smart crusaders that happen to be involved in left-wing politics or happen to be involved in right-wing politics can put a lot of the bullshit down and sit down and talk about a common enemy. That does not say that we don't that we give away our feelings about race or anything like that, but it means for survival of everybody concerned, especially the working class. It needs to be done. And I think that they, even though obviously it wouldn't be, I wouldn't look at Ralph Nader's deal as the best thing that ever came down the pike. It's a start. It's a start. Now, once in a while I get taken to the woodshed for reprinting a comment from someone who is newer to the program than a lot of people are. And sometimes they'll say something that's just not too good. Or they'll say, I like these guys and they're not too good. But we got to have a little patience with these people. We can point out their errors and try to help them, educate them into to the new way and the way we do things. Instead of, let's not jump all over them. Let's not just attack people, because there's more and more new people coming on board here on the old insurgent. And they don't know everything that you know. And so let's take it easy on them. When you got criticism of it, we'll print the comment, we'll print the anti-comment, and the whole bit. Well, we got an email here from Evelyn Hutchison, who is the mother of Matt Hale. And she says, I want to keep you informed of the latest from Matt. He's working on a supplement to his latest brief he filed. I sent you a download of that brief. He also wanted to let you know that the civil suit filed in January is still ongoing. Matt is asking that you write to him. His mail and his friends mean so much to him and brightens his day. Matthew Hale, 15177-424. USP, Florence, ADMAX, P.O. Box 8500, Florence, Colorado, 81226. And if you'd like to send a donation to his legal fund, you can send it to Evelyn Hutchison, 200 Carlson Avenue, that's C-A-R-S-O-N, Avenue 25H, Washington, Illinois, 61571. And if you missed that email address and the information and Matt's address, go up to our website. We list all those addresses up there. And her name is spelled Evelyn, E-V-E-L-Y-N, Hutchison, H-U-T-C-H-E-S-O-N. Well, Snowden's releasing thousands of pictures that NSA has collected. Thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. So maybe your picture's on there. If you see mine, let me know. Haven't I told you people that religion is where the money is? The Pope says he's furious over luxury flat of top Vatican official. It sits atop the roof of an old palazzo in the center of Rome, surrounded by a broad terrace that affords breathtaking views across the eternal city to the mountains beyond. The penthouse apartment at the center of Paola Sorrentino's Oscar-winning movie La Gran Bellezza, or perhaps the chosen retreat of a Forbes list billionaire. No, the flat in question is being created in the Vatican for the man who until recently was its most senior official. While Pope Francis has been exhorting his clergy almost weekly to live lives as simple and frugal as his own, work has been going ahead on a luxurious retirement home for Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, who stepped down as Vatican Secretary of State last October. Reports of an extensive renovation project began to circulate in April, but it was not until last week that an Italian gossip magazine, Chai, published the first photograph of the work being carried out on top of the Palazzo San Carillo, just inside the walls of the city-state. There you go. Religion's very profitable. Well, do you remember the man Mordecai Vanunu, who was blowing the whistle on Israel's super stockpile of atomic weapons that they lie about every day? Well, despite serving 18 years in prison, including 11 in solitary confinement, Vanunu is forbidden from traveling and speaking to the media. Recently, he was denied a permit to speak before the British Parliament following an invitation by 54 MPs. The Israeli Interior Minister and the IDF Central Command have decided to prolong the restrictions on the freedoms of nuclear whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu. Vanunu's attorney, Avigdor Feldman, has been notified of the decision. Feldman told Plus 972 magazine that he once more petitioned the High Court for justice on Vanunu's case. Since his release from prison in 2004, Vanunu hasn't been allowed to leave Israel's borders, enter a foreign consulate or embassy, come within 500 meters of international borders, ports, and airports, or enter the West Bank. He is forbidden from speaking to journalists, and the Shin Bet, Israel's security agency, monitors all foreign nationals he meets. The Shin Bet also approves Vanunu's meetings with a foreign national who the Israeli media says is his partner. So you see right there, Israel's always lied to their teeth about their atomic weapons. And one reason they don't want anybody to look at them is because a lot of that stuff was stolen from the United States. Instead, in fact, the original uranium that was used to put their first bombs together were stolen out of Pennsylvania, according to my information. Well, federal plans to enforce new carbon emission cuts, potentially by up to 20%. The only objection the Republicans always come up with is it'll kill jobs. Could spark a rapid expansion of the renewables sector. The environmental groups predicted Sunday, ahead of the unveiling of a new government blueprint on clean energy, quote, if you're working in solar or the wind industry, you should feel very happy right now. Those are the industries growing faster than the rest of the economy, unquote, Mike Brune, executive director of the Sierra Club, said, quote, it's clear that those are going to be the industries to work in, invest in, and watch. They're about to explode in terms of growth. Now, it's interesting that Obama has gone to Congress many times to try to get some legislation through to beef up restrictions on this coal emission crap. And they won't do anything about it, so he took it on himself to do it. So that's the way it goes. Now the Republicans can just sit back and complain like they always do.
I'm in the rock, Justin Bieber hooked up with a supermodel.
Yes, indeedy, man. Us Weekly is saying that he was able to get with Adriana Lima when they partied together in Cannes last week. She's 32. He's 20.
She's going to put him on grown man status.
You know, might be a good thing, man. He might start acting a lot better if he hook up with an older chick.
Yeah.
Start hanging around a little twist now.
Now, she just announced recently that her marriage with former NBA player Marco Jarrett is over after 5 years. But did you know that she lost her virginity at the age of 27 because she said she wanted to wait until she got married?
Man, you found a chick with it's hard to find a chick with zero mileage.
Eric, it ain't that hard.
Oh, yes, it is.
Portia, damn it, did lose her virginity since she was 30.
Yep, that's right.
Of course, you think you might let him hit?
Peach buzz he's growing in. It's kind of hot. I'm going to lay down with the chocolate. Make that a swirl, huh?
Oh! What?
Yeah.
Now, Justin Bieber had quite the memorable time in Cannes earlier this month. The 20-year-old pop star spent the night with the newly single Adriana Lima, who announced her separation from ex Marco Jarrett in early May. Source tells E! News that the Victoria's Secret Angel and the Beauty and the Beast singer hooked up in the French Riviera while the Biebs was busy partying it up at the 67th Annual Festival. Us Weekly was first to report the news of the pair's romance, claiming Bieber went after the supermodel at the One Oak Bash at Club Gotha.
Well, you're probably wondering what the hell that was all about. Well, they said they had something about this Justin Bieber. They've found some tapes of his where he talked about the Nigers. And it said, if you go to this site, you can hear it. Well, all I heard was a bunch of screaming maybe Negroes and about him getting this whore over in the movie expose. So sorry about that. Forget it. Besides, who really cares if Justin Bieber said nigger 10 years ago? We want him to say it today. Well, I see that Eli the Weasel, Elie Wiesel, humanitarian, Nobel Prize laureate, and chairman of the Alec Miners Advisory Board, said he turned down an offer from Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to secede Shimon Peres as the president of the state of Israel. His answer was, leave me alone, I write books. I bullshit about the Holocaust. Well, it looks like the Jews are trying to get your state legislators involved in their international squabbles. State legislators across the country are debating social issues from women's rights to gay homo rights, yet seldom does the debate venture to the denial of basic human rights in foreign countries. In Iran, for example, a woman can't leave the country without her husband's consent. Well, that's the way they do things in Iran. Honor killings are encouraged. Well, that's the way they do things sometimes in Iran and other Middle Eastern countries. And the rape of torture of women in Iranian prisons is not uncommon. Probably men, too. Why should state and local politicians, Americans, care? Well, they may care, but it's none of their business. That's an eternal situation with the country. I suppose you want to send over another 10,000 American white troops to get their ass whipped to straighten all that crap out. Typical of Jews. They want to get into your state houses now. Well, they've been in your state houses for years, but they want you to cry about Iran. Well, Iran takes care of Iran. We should take care of the United States, and that's it, Jew boy. If you're so worried about Iran, there are no hooks in your ass, Rabbi. This was on the internet. You can go over there anytime you want. Put a slap on 44s on each hip and go on in there and straighten it out. Don't bother me, baby. But with the Jews, you always notice how, hey, somebody else should do something. Your federal government should do something. Political party should do something. Your state house should do something. Yeah, please do it for us, please. Get this. Recognizing that a nuclear Iran is the greatest threat of our time. The U.S. Congress has empowered local and state governments to stop Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons. Well, what are we going to do? Is the Indiana National Guard going to attack Iran or something? The 2010 legislation known as CISADA allows local and state governments to enact sanctions to pressure the Iranian regime between choosing its own economic survival or a nuclear bomb. Well, I know that's what you Jews want. At least 29 states have enacted divestment legislation against investing in Iran. But much more can be done, of course, to help your little sheenies. Unfortunately, some candidates care more about politics than taking principled position on bombing Iran. For example, the national nonprofit and nonpartisan organization United Against Nuclear Iran wrote a letter to the Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetta and California congressional candidate Wendy Gruhl in April 2013, urging them to support sanctioning ships using the L.A. port and also do business with Iran. Please help us, Sheenies. Help us, Sheenies. What a miserable bunch of sons of bitches. Always wanting everybody to fight their battles. Well, I was doing some research on who's buying who and which politician is getting bought off the most, and I ran across these sources that you may find interesting about the Mongol nations. Yeah. The Pachanga Band of Mission Indians, that's in Southern California, not far from where I used to live, have given a total of $43,969,951 over a period of years to politicians. The Morongo Band of Mission Indians, which is not that far, there's a whole bunch of them there east and north of San Diego in Riverside County, $39,063,909. Tribes for Fair Play on 94 put in $24,754,413 to politicians and then the Agua Caliente Band of Cahila Indians, that's right out there in San Diego County, $22,081,201. That's a lot of money. That's a hell of a lot of money that the Mongols are coughing up to buy politicians. Oh, and here's the one. Actually, I used to go to this once in a while. The Palaban of Mission Indians. Now, they built a big casino up there, and this was a nothing group, a really sad bunch of Mongols up there. They lived in old trailers, and they were all on some kind of welfare, and alcoholism and the whole bit. I happen to know about it because years and years ago, way back in the very early 70s, late 60s, I was practicing Catholic, and my kids were going to Catholic school up there, so I was in the Parent Teachers Association and found out firsthand how Mongols operate. And I'm telling you, they're a sad bunch. It must be the Jews that keep these casinos going, because these kind of Mongol fat-ass Indians couldn't keep anything going. Anyhow, the Palaban of Mission Indians spent $13,180,519 on buying politicians. How about that? Let's see if I can find any more here. Well, I'm sure there's a bunch more here. Oh, here's the Sakyan Band of Kamaye Nation Indians. They donated $7,061,602 to buying politicians. Let me see down here if there's any more. I'm sure there is. See, Walmart only coughed up $5,158,385. The alleged Indians are giving more than Walmart to buy politicians. Well, anyhow, there's a whole lot of bunch of other people in here, but we don't have time to go through it all. Let me scan just a little farther. Oh, let's see here. Chevron Corporation, $4 million. Mm-hmm. Gee, what chintzy pikers they are. Well, since I was just looking at the Indian situation, or the so-called fake Indians, That's about it for now. But anyhow, you get the idea. Those are tremendous amounts of money being used to buy politicians around the country from these Indian tribal gambling casinos. And as far as I'm concerned, they should require every Mongol Indian that's on a reservation to have a passport to come out into our society and pay taxes to come into our society. If he's going to have a sovereign nation of Indians, then we have our sovereign nations. And there should be a gate which they come and go into these reservations, and they should have to present a passport. And also the Indian nation in that area should be coughing up tax money, a lot of tax money for the state. Yeah. Anyhow, that information comes to you from OpenSecrets.com. You can go there and find out where the money's going. It's a very good service, OpenSecrets.com. Well, no matter what they said in Washington today, rather than advocating clean energy independence, Republican and Democratic candidates alike are doubling down in defense of big coal with a wildly inaccurate war on coal rallying cry, just in time for the midterm elections. Their bogus claim is overreaching federal regulations are killing coal jobs. Central Appalachia is a crucible for the midterms, as a recent Washington Post headline, "Why Senate Control Could Hinge on Democratic Opposition to the War on Coal," posited. For Senate hopefuls running in traditionally coal-friendly states such as West Virginia and Kentucky, painting Obama as anti-coal is practically a prerequisite, regardless of party affiliation. Such pro-coal stances come only 5 months after the West Virginia coal chemical disaster, which exposed massive regulatory failures and subjected 300,000 Charleston residents to an endless game of drinking water roulette with 10,000 gallons of toxic contaminants. One might think these candidates would retire the overblown rhetoric, address the nation's mounting health concerns, and even offer ideas for Appalachia's much-needed transition toward clean energy economy. But listening to some of the primary victory speeches, you wouldn't have suspected that January's disaster, which cost West Virginia more than $60 million, was the state's fifth such major industrial accident in 8 years. Only a few weeks ago, two coal miners died in a violation-ridden mine. Growing evidence suggests that toxic fallout from the mountaintop removal mining might be one of the worst health care emergencies in the nation. And a key climate change study released last month issued another urgent call to combat the primary cause of global warming, human activities predominantly burning fossil fuels. So let's call it right. We're in the throes of a war on coal mining communities and our climate, not big coal. For years and years, I've listened to the coal companies, told our political leaders they'd better not support mine safety laws, they'd better not support black lung protections, and they'd better not vote for laws to protect our precious water. Third-generation disabled coal miner Carl Shoup wrote in an op-ed, "Tired of big coal telling our politicians what to do," earlier this spring for the Lexington Herald Leader. In Turkey last month, coal mining tragedy has resulted in widespread protests against the government, especially when Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdoğan implied that such explosions were common, casually drawing a comparison to England's 19th century coal disasters. It's okay. We only lose a few hundred. But in Kentucky, West Virginia, and even the coal country of Democrat-controlled Illinois is a similar time warp, led by the politicians caught between misinformed nostalgia a failed reality check on the ailing coal industry and the powerful mining lobby has prevented the region from addressing coal's indisputed role in climate change and its untenable health and environmental costs during the election cycles. West Virginia coal chemical disaster notwithstanding, this year's midterm elections might be the worst-case scenario yet. Take the verbal war stewing between U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell and senior Republican from Kentucky and his Democrat opponent, Allison Lundgren Grimes, Kentucky's Secretary of State. A vote for my opponent is a vote for a guy who says coal makes you sick, McConnell said, linking Grimes to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, during his primary victory speech. Not to be outdone, Grimes shot back, "I don't agree with the president's war on coal. I think it's wrong for Kentucky," she said, during her own victory speech, rallying around the Environmental Protection Agency with a fervor that would make a lobbyist with the National Mining Association blush. It's on Mitch McConnell's watch, not mine, that overburdensome regulations have been imposed upon the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So you see, big mining, billionaire mining interests are going to ride West Virginia and other places right into the ground. I mean, they just continue to have mine accidents. They don't administer safety rules. They pollute. They've got these giant holding pools of toxic material, holding millions of gallons of toxic material in pits that are right by the rivers and streams and lakes. And that last time there, you saw how that spilled there and messed up the drinking water for Charleston. And who knows what the long-range effects of that's going to be. So anyhow, that's a little bit of bringing you up to speed on that stuff. We're going to have to make a decision here, boys and girls. You either want to save the environment for white people or go down coughing, puking, and dying. Well, this Kerry is certainly one son of a bitch, Secretary of State. He's in there because he married a woman who's a billionaire with her ketchup factory. Other than that, what's his claim to anything? And so he said about Snowden, who's a hero, in my book he is, he should man up and come back to the U.S. Well, I wish he'd come back and punch you right in the fucking nose. Seen widely as an attempt by Kerry and the Obama administration to turn public opinion against the 30-year-old former intelligence contractor, for many it had the opposite effect, making the secretary look both petty and misogynistic, not to mention wrong for characterizing Snowden as less than a man for his actions. Talk about less of a man. This is a guy who says send people over there and kill people in the Middle East, ship them all kinds of weapons so they can kill each other. Why don't you go over there, Kerry, put your white ass on the line? Responding to Kerry's remarks on his website, Peter Van Buren, a former government employee and whistleblower himself, said that the Secretary of State, who at this point sounds more like Grandpa Simpson than America's senior diplomat, has apparently been relegated within the Obama administration to the role of mumbling bully boy statements, Fox machismo rantings whose intended audience and purpose are very, very unclear. Yeah, what is it? Protect American privacy or protect the NSA and their corporate friends? On Twitter, some turned the tables on Kerry's comments by saying that to the extent the term is a cultural code for courage or bravery, it is the Secretary of State and the government he represents who should man up by admitting their short-sighted and mistaken approach to the Snowden affair and the foreign policy and surveillance issues more broadly. Well, I'll tell you what, he should be arrested, taken before federal court, tried for treason. Not Snowden, Kerry. because anyone who supports this massive collection of private data on American citizens is a flat-out traitor to the country. I mean, there's no doubt about it. What can you call it but treason? Actually, here's two or three comments on that subject. Actually, it's Secretary Kerry who needs to man up and admit that the Espionage Act is unconstitutional. That's right. And then here again, John Kerry's comments on hero Edward Snowden are pathetic. Mr. Kerry, why don't you man up and admit you're complicit in police state spying on us? That's right. Man up and come home, says Kerry to Snowden. Presumably home is where men like Kerry blow men up, women and children, to pieces via a joystick. Well, here's the latest advice from the Choose. Yeah. Oh, there's my microphone way over there. Maybe you can't even hear me. Jerusalem, Reuters, Israel urged Europe's rising right-wing parties on Sunday not to ally with neo-Nazi racist parties, saying it would not recognize political blocs with ties to such groups. After their resounding victories in the May 22-25 election for the European Parliament, various nationalist and anti-immigration parties have been negotiating on forming coalitions within the assembly. Well, how does that make them Nazi or not Nazi? They're nationalists and they're anti-immigration. Though the continent's shift rightward largely reflects domestic political issues, right, it has caused unease in the Jewish state created in the aftermath of the Nazi Holocaust that is a strong trade and diplomatic partner of Europe. You notice how they use their words? they're wordsmiths, all right. Quote, the significant strengthening of parties that have a neo-Nazi, which is a non-word, non-descriptive thing of anything, except what the Jews want you to think, I guess, racist character is very troubling. Well, I like the racist character part. Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman told visiting German politician and servant Stephen Weil, according to a statement from Lieberman's office. Let's see here. Let's see what else he's got to say. Wait a minute here. Where are we at here? Oh, okay. European countries should examine closely the trends that brought this about and how it might be dealt with. Yeah, well, you Jews brought a lot of it about. You're so pro-integration or immigration, integration, everything else. You're at the bottom of the heap. You know, you don't want it in Israel, though. No, got to keep those niggers in that concentration camp, man. Lieberman named Hungary's Jobbik and Greece's Golden Dawn as among the parties that Israel deemed illegitimate and called on more moderate European rightists not to join forces with them. Is that sort of like the Republican Party here in the United States? Moderate European rightists. A faction which included a party of this kind will be void, as far as we're concerned, said Lieberman, and we'll put all kinds of pressure on Uncle Sam and everybody else. An ultra-nationalist within Prime Minister Benjamin Nitwit's conservative coalition government. Well, how much more radical can you get than Netanyahu threatening atomic war with everybody if they even look the wrong way? It would seem to me like maybe Mr. Netanyahu is a neo-Nazi. Isn't it amazing how Jews and others can come up with a word and cut off all argument, all conversation? That's it? Without ever even getting to the crux of the argument? Neo-Nazi, white supremacists. They got all these little words in a book, and they give them out to the press, too. Every major newspaper, and even minor newspaper, has this book on what the terms shall be used, like white Aryan resistance, which no longer exists, It's insurgent. Forget it. It's white Aryan resistance till the end of time. Because that's what the Jews told them to do. That's it. Well, here's a horrible catastrophe. A Michigan middle school teacher's been suspended for 2 weeks. What the hell is that? Wait a minute here. Somebody's shooting at my ass. Some of these pop-ups are not something to behold. A Michigan middle school teacher has been suspended for 2 weeks and put on bread and water for including a video of white people in blackface in his lesson on Jim Crow laws and segregation. Monroe Middle School teacher Alan Barron, 59 years old, was placed on administrative leave for just 2 weeks to go before he retires after 36 years in the district, the Monroe Evening News reported. An administrator who sat in on Barron's lesson on segregation laws said he found the lesson plan offensive and racist. I wonder what the race of the person who sat in was. Oh, it's probably a white Republican. Are you kidding? Parents and students have rallied around Barron, with one student making the and distributing T-shirts and parents initiating social media campaign. Are some white people getting fed up with this bullshit? Quote, Mr. Barron is one of the great teachers we have in Monroe Public Schools, a parent wrote on Facebook. Quote, he's changed many children's lives over the course of his career. If Mr. Barron felt that he was teaching something that was offensive, he would most definitely not have done it. Well, everything's offensive. Nowadays, you know, anything, you can't even, you just can't do it. You can't teach anything without offending somebody. Yeah. She was more offended that they stopped the video, Aaron told the newspaper. It had nothing to do with racism. Well, that's debatable. History is history. Well, yeah, and racism is a part of history, and racism is good. We need to educate our kids to see how far we've come in America. How is that racism? Now, this is typical white denial. See how far we've come. Well, look at all your major cities falling to pieces. Millions of black people running amok. We've come a long way, baby, all right. Aaron called the situation sad. Quote, he's one of the best teachers we've had. We can't believe that this is happening, she said. Well, I think it's a good thing that these things happen because I think that that's what needs to be every time anybody, any white person stands up, smack them down till they finally get smacked down and they come back up with an AK-47 or an AR-15 and say, I ain't being smacked down no more. It's going to take quite a while for these people finally to totally get the message. Meanwhile, they're saying, like this woman, well, we need to educate our kids and see how far we've come in America on the race issue. How is that racism? Well, if you take all the fake crime figures, and you take all the population growth among the blacks and the ghettos and the shootouts and everything else, and if you report it, I guess that's racism. Truth is racism. Truth is anti-Jewism. Oh, somebody finally picked up on my black KKK thing. Headline, racist blacks, self-hating whites, and black KKK and its supporters. Forget anti-Semitic. Most of America don't even know what a real Semite is, so when I hear the stupid statement made by an American, I always dismiss it. Now, LOL, if I associated with the KKK and made it known to this group, I would be called a racist and bigot from here on out until the day I die. I want to know how someone who associates themselves with the belief invented here in Detroit, Michigan in the 30s, that a millions of years ago, some mad scientist, a Jew, I'm sure, on some far-off remote island decided one day to wreak havoc on the earth. Completely against Islam, there's no creator in and except God and in Islam, there is no color, race, or ethnicity. So there you got that straight, right? To do that, he decided to create the white devil. He came up with a magic potion and poisoned a group of people with it. Everyone was black. Whites didn't exist yet. As he kept poisoning them with his magic potion, each generation got lighter and lighter until one day, poof, he got it right. White people. The project of creating the white devil was accomplished. From then on, the white devil roamed the earth, wreaking havoc. Until, oh my God, Allah came to Detroit, Michigan, reincarnated as a human in the 30s. Yeah, he was a mulatto. A complete impossibility in Islam against the number one first and foremost belief that one must believe to be a Muslim. That's a note that this person put in there, because this person is a Muslim, a true Muslim, I guess. Since that day, they have had their temples and stand overlooking the Davison Freeway and several other locations throughout the city. They, the Black Nation of Islam members, stand there armed at the doors, making sure no white person or even black who is too light and may have white blood does not get through the doors. One of the biggest blows for the black version of the KKK was when the top leaders, Malcolm X, decided to, for some reason, as a non-Muslim, go to Mecca, Saudi, for the Muslim Hajj pilgrimage. Of course, he had no certification of being a Muslim, as he was not. And he had a lot of white blood in him, too. You know, Malcolm was a redhead, redheaded Negro. He was taken into custody and held in jail in Jeddah, as non-Muslims are not permitted in the holy city of Mecca, where Hajj is performed. Finally, he got the message to one of his Cracker Jack Box certified Arab Muslims in the States, who had a little pit bull and told Saudi officials to allow him to Hajj. Yep, he contacted the white devil for a favor when nobody else could save his ass. Malcolm leaves prison and goes to Hajj, which had already started. It was as if someone had hit him in the face with a ton of bricks. He looked around and all he saw was millions of Arabs, whites, Asians, Indians, Pakis, black, Latino, and every other race you can possibly think of. He was so confused. This is Islam. What you see here is a real Islam as revealed and taught by the Prophet Muhammad. Yeah, race mixing. Total race mixing religion. Even worse than Christianity, if there can be anything worse. Malcolm was in complete shock and he felt lied to and betrayed. And like all those years of work and hatred wasted on a lie. Well, he didn't have to go over there to find that out. He could have found that out on television. Alhamdulillah, Malcolm fell to the ground and cried for repentance and became a real Muslim and left the black version of the KKK behind. He stayed on in Saudi a bit longer to learn more about his new religion, what Islam really was. He gave up the name Malcolm X and became Maik al-Shabazz. He came back to the USA and announced he was now a Muslim and could no longer support the work and hate-filled political black movement that called their self-nation of Islam the Black KKK. Malik went to make a public speech shortly after about the truth, the lies, and the hate of the black KKK, a.k.a. Nation of Islam, and when he stepped on the stage and began to speak, what a surprise! He was assassinated in cold blood. Yep, this black KKK supporter, she was a real hero, all right. I guess to the blacks who hate every race but their own, and the self-hating whites, but for anyone who believes all peoples are God's creation, no matter their race, color, ethnicity, or gender, if they know the truth, what this woman associated herself with, there is no possible way a decent human being who stands on we are all equal can possibly put this person on the status of hero. Okay, we got a temporary edit here. What does this say? Got a couple of house work to do. Be back to the idiot pronoun. That's got nothing to do with the story. Well, anyhow, that's enough of that. So, if you think Islam is something, you know, there's a lot of white people becoming Islamic now, you know. And even, I remember when there was a Nazi leader, a Nazi, because I don't believe he was a National Socialist, up in San Francisco. And one of the boys went to see him, and he had a Muslim prayer rug hanging on the wall. He'd get down and do his Muslim thing twice a day. Some white Aryan. There's been several of those guys that said they were white racist. Totally impossible. Oh, you know this Angelou that everybody's saying, what a wonderful woman that just died and wrote these books and everything? Well, in 1995, Angelou spoke at the Million Man March organized by Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. That same year, she lent her support to the convicted cop killer and former Black Panther Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Indeed, Angelou joined such luminaries as Alec Baldwin, Derek Bell, Noam Chomsky, Spike Lee, and Norman Mailer in signing a full-page New York Times ad advocating a new trial for Abdul-Jamal. In 1995, Angelou appeared in Washington for the Million Man March organized by the Chicago-based minister Louis Farrakhan and his Nation of Islam. Of Farrakhan, she said, I am not his apologist nor the person to interpret him, but he has the right to say what he thinks to be true. Well, I guess that's acceptable. And then down here it says, in 1960, Angelou left the United States to reside briefly in Cairo, Egypt, with her new husband, South African freedom fighter Fassoumzi Make. While abroad, she learned to speak French, Spanish, Italian, Arabic, and the West African language Fanti fluently. The couple soon separated, and Angelou moved to Ghana. While there, she befriended former Nation of Islam leader Malcolm X on his visit to Africa and embraced his black nationalist philosophy. There you go. You didn't hear that on public radio, did you? They all talking about her, what a wonderful gal she was. I mean, you may think she was a wonderful gal, but they didn't tell all of her exploits. Angelou's seemingly straightforward appointment to the museum's board was not without some controversy. She came under fire from Washington Post columnist Richard Cohen, who criticized Angelou for accepting a speaking invitation from Louis Farrakhan, the leader of the Nation of Islam, who is considered by many Jews to be an anti-Jew. Angelou had recited a poem at the 1995 Million Man March organized by Farrakhan, which brought hundreds of thousands of blacks to the Washington Mall. Now, let's see. I think we got a little bit more here on her. Angelou had an unparalleled ability to inspire those around her and drew some of the most significant Americans of the 20th century into her orbit. She was pals with James Baldwin, Rosa Guy, musicians like Abby Lincoln, Max Roach, and had confidence and admiration of civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and revolutionaries like Malcolm X. Angelou was the epitome of the kind of activist like Harry Belafonte and communist Paul Robeson, whose life was dedicated to both art and advocacy. When she first met Malcolm, Angelou wrote that up close he was a great, great red arch through which one could pass to eternity. Maybe that's because he had red hair nigger. I had never been so affected by a human presence as a leader of the Nation of Islam. Malcolm had favored racial separation. Well, that was one good thing about it, till he got off the track. And she was a close friend and colleague of Malcolm X, working briefly as a leading member of his post-Nation of Islam grouping, the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Angelou was a close associate of Malcolm X prior to his assassination and had plans to start a new effort with him to advance African-American rights. According to Angelou, she planned to jumpstart the Organization of Afro-American Unity with Malcolm X. The two intended on to vocalize the issues plaguing black people in the U.S. to the United Nations with the hope that the international body would assist in their struggle. There you go. You're not, I'll bet you didn't hear all this stuff on public radio, did you? Yeah, I bet you didn't. But I'll bet you a lot of the big shot Jews are biting their tongue when they're eulogizing this broad. Well, boys and girls, that's about it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Tears Day. See if I can't offend some more people. And spread the word. Get the straight stuff here on Insurgent Radio Network. We don't screw around. If you got any questions, really hardcore questions, well, ask me. I'll give you a straight answer. But in the meantime, get on the phone, call Morris Dees and say, the word's out. You've been financing Tom Metzger, and Tom Metzger's pissed off. He wants you to catch up on your alimony and send him some goddamn money, man. 14-5 and shut up.
Declaration of War, November 25th, 1984. It is a dark and dismal time in the history of our race. An evil shadow has fallen across our once fair land. A certain vile, alien people have taken control of our country. When the day comes, we will not ask whether you swung to the right or whether you swung to the left. We will simply swing you by the neck.